Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Boomer and the Vape Show, giving voice to 78 million boomers from coast to coast and border to border. Each day we have a different guest and a different topic. Our guests always have a nugget or two for anyone, regardless of where you are. We hope you enjoy the relaxed conversational style of the show. Nothing fancy, just boomers sitting around the table talking about stuff. Now, here are the Boomer and the Vape, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
And indeed, it is the Boomer and the Babe Show on Blog Talk Radio. It is Monday, and I think it's the 25th. Is it the 25th, Deborah?
Yes, it is.
No, it is the 25th. Well, I got the day right. Sometimes I don't get the day right. It's the 25th, Monday, 2010, and we're broadcasting from the Boomer and the Babe Enterprises Studio in Phoenix, Arizona. And we're going to be getting to our guest in just a minute. But before we do that, I always invite people to go to our website, take a look around at www.boomerandthebabe.com, sign up for our free online magazine, and take a little tour through the rest of the site and see some of the other things that we're involved in and everything that the Boomer and the Babe Enterprises does. And I am Pete Peters, and the voice you heard before was
Deborah Brown.
Deborah Brown, there she is. Today's guest, I found today's guest while listening to some other blog talk shows. She's a phenomenal lady with a phenomenal background and a phenomenal story and a lot of help for people that are in business. Her name is Aricia LaFrance, and she is a marketing guru. And Aricia, welcome to the Boomer and the Babe Show.
Thanks so much, Pete, and thanks for having me.
Well, we're looking forward to this time together because marketing is something that we do a lot of as the Boomer and the Babe, so we're just going to turn it over to Deborah and let her get started and start the show in our usual manner.
Well, I'd like for you to give us your life story so that we can build rapport right out of the chute. And so basically I call that your two-minute movie, and we don't really time you, but pretty close. So give us your two-minute movie. And however far back you'd like to go, coming forward to today, being with us on the radio.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Deborah. My name is Aricia LaFrance, and I am a psychological marketing strategist. And, you know, my background really is as a psychotherapist. I have always been interested in psychology and the way that people think and mindset. And so what I do is I really help people with marketing, especially people who hate to do marketing and who do not think that they're very good at it. I have a lot of people that are helpers and healers and first-time business owners as well as big businesses and corporations, and I provide classes and training and one-on-one sessions. And mostly what I'm looking at is helping people to identify their strengths and helping them to realize that they can market from their strengths, whatever they are. So I get a lot of people that are kind of introverted and would like to do marketing, but they're a little intimidated by it. So that's the work that I do. I live in Broomfield, Colorado, which is right between Boulder and Denver. I have been married for 15 years. I have a couple of kids and a couple of cats.
And how
where
did you get your start in the marketing field? What you said you're a psychoanalyst. You said
psychotherapist.
I'm sorry. How did marketing spring out of that?
You know, the way that I got into marketing actually was that I was taking a lot of marketing and business classes. Obviously, my master's degree is in educational psychology, which is really the psychology of how people learn. So as a psychotherapist, I was kind of already doing marketing because I was helping people to identify their strengths and really bring those out into the world, which is what I think marketing truly is. And so I was taking a lot of marketing and business classes to kind of help me to run my own business. And I kept being told, you need to get out of your comfort zone, because they would have these ideas and I'd say, ooh, that sounds really pushy, or that sounds too salesy, or I'm really uncomfortable with that idea. And every teacher I had said, you have got to get out of your comfort zone. said, you know, it just doesn't make that much sense. I think probably the turning point for me and deciding to go into this was I was running a nonprofit. Following the shootings at Columbine in the 90s, I decided to open a mentoring center for the kids. So I opened this mentoring center, and I was talking with some friends and some advisors, and they said, you know, you really need to change the way that you dress, because I'm quite casual in the way that I dress. And I was told, you've got to wear the high heels and the pantyhose and the suit and all that, because you're going to be going in and talking with donors. And I tried doing that. It just didn't go that well, because I was so uncomfortable and I couldn't be who I truly was. And that was what they were going to fund. They were going to fund my passion and my excitement about the work that I was doing with these kids. And I came in all stiff and professional and trying to watch what I said, and I wasn't getting any donations for the center. And then I just decided, you know what, I'm going to pitch this, I'm going to be myself, and I went in as myself, and I was really able to express to them, look, this is really important work, and we're helping these kids to overcome a lot of the fears and anxieties and grief that they're going through. Really able to express that. So when I was coming from my strength, I was able to get this grant money to do this work that I really was very passionate about. And so I started looking at it and saying, I don't have to go out of my comfort zone. So that means other people don't have to go out of their comfort zone either. What they need to do is they need help to dig up. What are my strengths? What is it that I do the best? And what is it that I love to do? And then do their marketing from there. I don't believe that anybody should do anything that they're uncomfortable with to market, because they're going to draw exactly the wrong people to their business if they do that.
Deborah, I want you to take special heed to that, please, because now I have just been given permission to go to networking meetings in my Bermuda shorts.
I knew you were going to hear that. I knew that's what you were going to hear. I knew it. I'm thinking, okay, fine, I'm staying in flip-flops until it just gets so cold that I can't.
That's a very good point. It really is a good point, because there's a certain element of everything, the way you dress, the way you perform, the way you do this, that it has to be you, because if it's not you, people just don't believe you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And when the other thing is, too, that I have found, the work that I do is really about attraction marketing. I've been really influenced by Jan Stringer, who wrote Attracting Perfect Customers, and her most recent book, Being Attraction, as well as the work of Ernest Holmes and Law of Attraction Principles, all of those kinds of things, I mean, just in the most practical sense. And what I have found with people is that when they are doing marketing that they're super uncomfortable with, so, for example, if you have somebody who hates to do public speaking, they're incredibly uncomfortable with it, they force themselves, they do a great job, they get terrific reviews, and they have clients start to call them and say, I heard you speak at such and such. I would love to work with you. Those clients are not going to resonate with that person, and so it's not going to be the greatest fit. It's going to be a tremendous amount of effort and a lot of work to try and connect and to try and work together, and then that person is not going to stay with them very long, and they're not going to refer people. But on the other hand, if this person says, you know, I just love volunteering, that's my passion, I really enjoy doing volunteer work when I'm not at my regular job, I'll tell them, great, what kinds of volunteer work do you do? And we'll find places that they can connect with a volunteer group that they're passionate about, meet people there, tell them about what they do, and that's going to be a perfect fit. That person's going to be a customer for life. And then the other thing that they're going to do is they're going to refer all their friends who are like-minded. And so you have this whole string of clients coming in.
Deborah, take over, because this is right in your wheelhouse. I know that.
Well, I like the idea of the brand champion, model, I call it, because what's happened to me right now is that I have one person that I have connected with from my passion, which is similar to what you're doing, I think, in that I have a sociology degree. I also have most of my psychology degree. I could get my double double major very quickly by just probably a senior project and then be done with it. But I love the brainstorming and the really observing and figuring out, you know, what is making the situation the way it is, and then amplifying the best parts of it. So what I like to do is actually embrace the comfort zone. And I think I didn't realize that until you were just saying what you were saying about, you know, people tell you get out of your comfort zone. And I think what I've been telling people is get into your comfort zone. You know, embrace those things that make you, you. And I always capitalize capital Y, capital O, capital U, so people get it. You know, this is about how you are and how you're going to take your message out to the world. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Because, you know, when you're out of your comfort zone, you are in a place of anxiety typically. I mean, it might not be huge anxiety, but you're going to feel a little off balance, a little discombobulated. And how are you going to be able to express then your passion, or how are you going to really be attracted to your clients? Because we tend to run away from people that are feeling anxious or angry, those kinds of emotions. We can feel it. We pick it up. And so it's better to be in a place where you're totally comfortable, you can totally be yourself, and that's when you're calm and relaxed and energized and passionate. That is very attractive to people, and people are going to want to have more of that, and so they're more likely to want to work with you.
Right. And then so what I was saying about the brand champion angle is that I have one person that I've worked with that, honestly, she thinks I invented sliced bread, I'm pretty much sure. You know, I'm not the best thing since it. I think she thinks I invented sliced bread. She just loves how I do the brainstorming and how I get her, how I've moved her into another space, you know, to really amplify her gifts and get out there and actually do what she wants to do and make money and all this other stuff. And what she has now done is turned me on to four other people who think the same thing.
Yep.
And yep. I can't tell you how exciting that becomes when you have that kind of attraction. You know, and then you take advantage, and I don't mean that in a negative way, but a good way, take advantage of that situation and just ride that wave and then keep stepping into it. That's what I tell people. Keep stepping into your, you know, whatever that is, keep stepping into it. Don't run away from it. And it's fantastic.
Well, and I talk with people about, I help them to double and triple their income while slashing their marketing budget. So I do that for individuals. I do it for companies as well. But one of the ways that I do that is I tell them, when you get really aligned with your ideal client and you start to draw those ideal people, and then they love working with you, so they continue to work with you forever, they refer all of their friends, well, you've just slashed your marketing budget by tons, because you're not putting tons and tons of advertisements out there. Instead, you're letting your clients do your marketing for you.
Exactly. And that is exactly the cycle that I am in right now. And boy, is it ever my favorite, because I have a new client today. As soon as we finish this wonderful interview, I'm going to go and meet someone new. And I would have never had that person come into my life probably through regular advertising means. It just would not have happened. So it really is this almost the best thing out there to figure out what exactly is your niche. How are you going to, you know, have your strengths and your passions drive other people to you because they found the experience to be so fantastic? Like you say, they want their friends and cohorts to find it too. So I just think that's exactly the right way to go myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And of course we have.
Go ahead.
So what I was going to say is, you know, we're kind of in the new normal. You know, Pete and I talk about the new normal. You probably talk about the new normal. You know, so the way things have always seemed to be available to us, the old way, I don't think is going to work anymore. You know, the low-hanging fruit on the tree, you know, you just go back and you just go, oh, I'll just pick this guy and this guy and this guy and work with them, and I'll do this, this, and this, and it'll all come great. And it's not working that way anymore. We really do have to figure out how we work smart and clever, authentic, all those things, And it's never going to go back. I don't think it's ever going to go back to the way it used to be. Do you?
I don't think so. And I think that what is happening, at least what I work with my clients on, is this idea of inspired action. And I'm not sure who originally coined the phrase, but I know that I read a lot of Ernest Holmes and Abraham Hicks and folks like that. And inspired action is really when you live your life from a place of, this is what I feel like working on in this moment. This is what I'm most passionate about. I mean, it really goes back to Benjamin Franklin and Da Vinci and all of those people who lived their life in that way quite successfully and very happily, because they looked at what in this moment inspires me. I know that we've got this thread going. I don't know what the deal is, but I talk to so many people about this, and they say, oh, really? If I was going to do inspired action, I would just lay on the couch all day. That's all I would do for weeks. And I, you know, if they're willing, I say, well, let's give it a shot. Let's see what happens. Well, they lay on the couch for about 3 or 4 hours, and they're like, oh, gosh, I'm sick of this. What do I feel like doing? And what winds up happening is they look at their to-do list, and they say, oh, yeah, you know what? Today, actually, I really feel like whatever it is, doing some marketing, or I really feel like contacting some clients, or I really feel like going out to the pottery studio, whatever it is. Whatever it is that they want to do. And when they start to live their life that way, they become incredibly attractive to other people. People really want to live their lives in that way, where they truly are going with the flow and doing what makes them happy in the moment. Incredibly attractive. And they find themselves really busy with lots of the clients that they love working with.
I like that idea a lot. Going with the flow is certainly contrary to get out of your comfort zone, isn't it? That language is so different.
Right, and forcing yourself to do things. I mean, there's only so far, you know, that willpower will take you. And most of the people that I know that are trying to exert willpower over their life, they're not very happy people. They're people who feel like, well, nose to the grindstone, and this is what I have to do, and I might as well, you know, do this thing that I don't feel like doing and just get it out of the way. Well, when we're in that mindset, I don't care who they are. There's nobody who can do a really, really good, inspired, passionate job when they are just forcing themselves to do it.
Well, I'm going to have to jump in here just for a little while because I am the grinder. I mean, there's no doubt about it. That's what I do. And I can honestly, I've been grinding for a long time. And I firmly believe that you've got to do a certain element, a certain amount of grinding. I don't necessarily disagree with everything that you and Deborah are talking about. It's just that before you do any of this stuff, the in-depth, before you do any of the work with other gurus, as I call them, you have to have a foundation. You need to have a basis. Your company, your business, whatever it is, you have to have a firm understanding of what it is, you have a firm understanding of your products, regardless of what the products are, and you have to have a firm understanding of what that's going to look like and how you're going to try to portray that, and you've got to build your brand, discover your brand, and then once you've done that, then you can get into all these other the embellishments, if you will, on hows and the whys and so on and so forth. But if you don't have that base, you're toast, because you can do all the marketing you want and all the psychological marketing you want, in my opinion, and whatever we call what Deborah does. All that stuff is not going to be worth a hoot if you don't have the basic structure. And I'm thinking right now, what I'm talking to people about is, let's forget all this other stuff for the moment, and let's make sure your structure is sound. If your structure is sound, now you've got something to stand on and build on, because if you don't have it, you've got nothing.
Right, and I think that that can be done, and it can be done in a way that is actually really fun and interesting. So one of the things that I do is I go into businesses, and we talk about, I ask them, how's your elevator speech working? What's your conversion rate from your elevator speech? And for most people, it depends on what they do, but for most people, it's pretty abysmal.
Right.
So I talk with them about the alternative to the elevator speech, and we do this work, and it's actually, people are like, wow, this is actually really fun. I'm having a good time with this, creating this alternative, and it's actually quite easy. And then with their mission and vision statement, I help them with that, but I do a different process. And people go through the process with me, and they're like, wow, this is actually really fun. I'm having a great time with this. And then typically I will refer them to the book Attracting Perfect Customers by Jan Stringer and tell them to take a look at that, go through the exercises in there, and they're really fun exercises to do, and people really enjoy doing them. So I think that you're right. I think that there needs to be that foundation, but I don't think that it needs to be like a nose to the grindstone, okay, well, you just have to do this. One of the exercises that I give to my career coaches, because I mentor career coaches, I'm on the board of CDI, which is Career Directors International, and so I mentor with different career professionals. And oftentimes they'll say, gosh, it is so hard to get people to do the things that they need to do for their job search. So I actually put a book together called Unlocking the Secrets of the Successful Career Seeker that's available on my website. But I talk about how do you get them to put their stuff together for their resume, because they're like, oh, I can't get them to send me their stuff. So I asked them, you know, how does that work? And it's like, well, you've got to get all your stuff together and you've got to send it to me and send me what you have, but then you've got to, you know, kind of have a scavenger hunt, and I know you don't want to do it, and I know it's going to be unpleasant. And they build this up as something that's not going to be any fun. So what I suggest people do is instead make it kind of a few-session process, because it's going to take probably that long anyway if you're dealing with somebody who's just been laid off or they're kind of in a mindset that's sort of unproductive. And the first session, you tell them, you know what, next week, here's what I want you to do. I want you to start gathering all of your stuff, your diplomas, your, you know, thank you letters that you've gotten, recommendations, all of that kind of stuff. And what I want you to do, though, is when you find something, I want you to look at it, and I want you to think about the day that you got that. And I want you to connect with how you felt that day when you were like, oh, I got my diploma, or I got this certificate, or I got this acknowledgement. And I want you to connect with that feeling very strongly and then put that in a file and then find the next thing and put that in a file. Put it all together. And then I want you to write me a note and tell me, how do you feel at the end of that process? And the reason that that's so important is that to be attractive to employers, they can't go in a sense of desperation and anger and frustration and fear. That's not going to be attractive at all. So they put that together, and then after they've done that, it's looking at those things and saying, you know, what were the things that you saw that you were the most proud of, or that you thought, wow, this is really something, or it was so fun earning this, because that's going to help to determine their job path as well. But it's something really where you make it more of a fun thing and more something that's going to be interesting and inspiring, because people are going to be more likely to do that.
Because they're enjoying it.
Because they're enjoying it, yeah. Yeah. You can. I think that willpower only takes you so far. I mean, there are people that can do the nose to the grindstone for their entire life. But there's some element of that that they enjoy.
Well, don't you think, maybe you don't, but I certainly feel that the willpower, the nose, shoulder to the grindstone in these times, inside some level, is exactly what we need right now. We've been living the high life and the easy put your sign up and build it and they will come, and that's just not the way it is anymore. And I think there's a certain element of shoulder to the grindstone. Now, whether you make it fun or not, that's another issue, that's my humble opinion, but I think there's an element of shoulder to the grindstone, because if you're going to be in business for yourself, you've got to be willing to take the long slog, and that's may well be what it is. And you've got to, and if you're not willing to take the long slog, whether you're enjoying it or not, whether it's high points, low points, good points, bad points, you still have to take the slog. And I think that's in and of itself, in my opinion, is a message that people need to understand.
I think that that's one way to do it. What I have found with myself and my clients, we do it a little bit differently, and it just may be a different group of people. personality-wise, you're talking about, at the work that I do, I use the Enneagram a lot, and I don't know if Deborah's familiar with it, but I use the Enneagram quite a bit. And you're talking about the 8 way to do it, which is the challenger, the boss. That is one personality type, and they do tend to have more of a shoulder-to-the-grindstone or nose-to-the-grindstone sort of way of doing things. A lot of the other personalities have a different way, and I tend to draw those personalities. So my philosophy is, if you are doing work that you really love doing and that you're very passionate about, what winds up happening is you become very, very good at what you do, and you tend to attract clients, and you tend to be able to charge a higher fee. There are things that I hate about doing business. I do not like doing bookkeeping. I love writing, but I don't like posting my own newsletter and posting my own articles and doing this and that and the other thing. But because I am quite good at what I do, because I love it, so I'm always researching it and I'm always learning and taking classes, I hire somebody to do the stuff that I don't want to do.
There you go.
That's my philosophy. It doesn't mean that yours is wrong. It means that yours works for your personality type. Mine works for my personality type and the kinds of clients that I tend to attract.
Well, I agree with that. I'm not arguing one over the other. I do agree with that because if I didn't agree with that, Deborah and I would not be in business together. There's a lot of things we wouldn't be doing together.
I'd like to say that I have a whole different approach. Obviously, we've been talking about that for the last half hour. But I like the butterfly way. You know, I just kind of flipped from person to person and thing to thing and, you know, spread a little sunshine here and a little something there. And then I figure out who I'm going to work with. And I work with that person. I make them happy. And then they butterfly off and do something with, you know, it's a totally different way from what Pete's talking about completely.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely... it works for him to be the way he is, and it works for me, obviously, to be the way I am. And then when we come together and we say, okay, one of us has got to be the hammer and the other one has got to be whatever the opposite of that is in certain circumstances, we can also have that come together. So we have a very interesting way of working together and succeeding in various endeavors. But I think you're right. You cannot just, you know, one broad brush and everybody's got to be a grinder. That's never going to be the right way. So
it all has to do a little bit, excuse me, with your background and where you came from. Now you may have changed along the way as far as your thought process, but my background is my dad was an engineer. It was white or it was black. There was no gray there. The light is either on or it's off. As I say to people, there is no rheostatic control here. It can't be dim. It's got to be on or off. Either it's light outside or it's dark outside. And the old adage about you work so hard that when you go to bed, you turn off the light and you get in bed before it gets dark. it's pretty much that way. Either you did it or you didn't, because I think it comes down to measurement, and eventually it comes down to measurement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Well, and I think you've just expressed where it is that we're headed, or we've kind of expressed it together, is people using their strengths. And we're in a world right now where it's like, okay, what are your strengths? What is your personality type, and what does that dictate about you and how you work? And one of the things that I do with people is to offer marketing strategies. I meet with them for 3 90-minute sessions, and the first session, we do an analysis of their personality. And you know, nobody's personality is right or wrong. It's just a matter of you know, what is your personality type and what does that say about you? So we analyze that from a marketing perspective, and then the second session, we start talking about what kinds of clients do you love working with, what kinds of clients do you hate working with? And we start to establish the personality types of their ideal client and the clients that they'd sort of prefer to be invisible to. We put that together, and in the third session, then we start talking about how can you attract your ideal client, how can you be essentially invisible to those clients that you don't want to draw. And there's ways to do that through language, through the colors that you choose, through the mediums that you begin to attract these people through. And so that's, you know, that's kind of how I do the marketing strategy, is really looking at personality type and attraction.
Do you, Aricia, do you get into, when you're working with your clients, do you actually, you're describing your psychological marketing as I understand it. Do you actually get into the day-to-day activity of what they're doing, one followed by two, followed by three, followed by four, or do you do that all within the context of what you've been describing to us?
What I do is I really look at the overarching, you know, who is it that they want to attract? What can they do to attract that type of person? So we start to get into, okay, you want to attract this sort of person, and that sort of person does not send, okay, for example, introvert versus extrovert. Okay, so they want to attract introverts. Great. Use the computer. Set up a website, things like that. If they say, I want to attract extroverts, it's like, great, then you need to get out into the world and really start to find those people that are doing extrovert types of activities. And that's just one aspect. We also look at socioeconomic. We also look at the Enneagram, just a lot of different elements to it. Then I have somebody that is actually in my Chamber of Commerce lease group that she's so funny because we stood up and had to introduce ourselves and then share if you were going to be a color, a crayon, what color would you be? And she stood up and she was wearing all brown and she said, I would be the brown crayon because I really love helping people with the minutiae of their marketing. And so she's fantastic, very talented, and I send people over to her for the day-to-day things, which is what she's passionate about helping people with.
Excellent, excellent. Because this brings us, I think, to where there's some common ground between yours and Deborah's style, which I will group as one, and my style, which I will group as the other, and that is some people. There's this big thing, and I call it a big thing out there in the marketing world that you have to get your expertise by writing a book. Or you have to get your expertise by being published and something like that. Now, that's not for all people. Some people just don't want to write a book, or they don't feel a need to be published. So you can't group all those people under one umbrella. It just doesn't work, does it?
No, and the fact is that if you love to write, then that's a great way for you to do marketing because you are going to attract people who love to read and who admire people who write. But if that's not your thing and you would rather go out and do public speaking or radio interviews or be on TV or whatever it is, do that because those are going to be people in your ideal audience. You're going to reach the people that you want, that you truly want to work with. You know, what you're talking about and what I just mentioned with my friend in my leads group is that what we are coming to is we're sort of leaving one way of doing marketing and coming into a new way. The old way was compete, compete, compete. You know, crawl over whoever you have to, put the other people down, say, oh, they don't know what they're talking about, that's crap, that doesn't work. Whatever, and then, you know, uplift yourself in that way, kind of by climbing over other people. What we are coming to is we're really coming to a time where we need to collaborate. In fact, in most Chamber of Commerce groups, if one person is doing one thing, so if I'm doing marketing, there can't be another person that does marketing in that group. Well, when this girl came to visit, her name is Amanda, when she came to visit our group and she said she did marketing, I was like, oh, that's fantastic. And I sat down with her afterwards and I said, what do you do? And she explained it to me and I said, that is wonderful because I do exactly the opposite. And she was like, oh, I don't like doing what you do. And I said, yeah, I don't like doing what you do either, so let's refer clients back and forth. And really the new way of working is collaboration. And that's the only way that we're going to really be able to be of service to people is when we say, this is what I do. And I don't do this other piece, but I have somebody really great that I really enjoy working with. So why don't you give that person a call and see what you think and see if that might be a good fit for you. And that's how we're going to be of the best service to our clients, I think.
And Deborah can certainly comment on that as far as how we handle that as well, because we do the same thing there. We have we have our big tent of purveyors, if you will, and each of them has their own specialty, and there are certain things that we just don't want to do, either one of us. I mean, there are certain things that I can't do and certain things that Deborah can do, but she doesn't want to do, so we just make sure that we send them in the right direction to the appropriate person and one that has a good reputation, and we know that recommendation is going to be a strong recommendation and they're going to perform well for that individual. But that doesn't stop that person from doing the rest of it with us.
Yeah, right. Yep.
And that speaks to an attitude that would be nice if everyone would be able to kind of share, and that is that there really is enough out there to go around. You know, we are not in such scarcity of things to do for people that, you know, we have to be selfish and then end up doing the parts we just really are not suited to or take up too much time and don't really give us the rewards money-wise or psychologically or anything else. You know, when we could just joint venture with somebody else and say, like you're talking about, you know, go to that person for those elements because he or she does a fantastic job, and I thoroughly recommend them for that. We definitely do that, and it makes it sound nice out in the world, you know, that we share. We're not worried, you know, we're not worried about not having enough abundance out there. That, you know, we've got to keep it all to ourselves and drive ourselves crazy doing the parts we just hate.
Right. Well, and what happens, too, is that, so let's say that you and I decide that we want to compete with each other, and I'm putting you down, you're putting me down, and that stuff is getting out into the world that, oh, this person does a terrible job, that person does a terrible job. What do? Well, they do marketing. By association, what winds up happening is people kind of get this negative, you know, thing. They have kind of a bad flavor in their mouth for marketing. And so they're
right.
Like, yeah, you know what? All marketers are kind of crummy people, so you don't want to have anything to do with them. On the other hand, if we decide to collaborate and I say, oh, my gosh, you know, I know this really great team, and they do this, that, and the other thing for their clients. It's amazing. It's stuff that I don't like to do personally, but they're really, really talented at it. So I can do this piece for you, and they can do that piece for you. Well, word's going to get out to, you know, my clients about you and vice versa. And there's going to be all of this goodwill that's generated. And when people hear about marketing, they go, oh, wow, but yeah, that's just great. I know the best people who do marketing. And it's the same way in any field, whatever it is, if it's acupuncture or chiropractics or, you know, whatever it is, doesn't matter. And so it's really the collaboration piece. I'm so glad to see that coming into existence at this point.
Well, there's one group of people, however, Arisha, that I do firmly believe that will never come back to that kind of a situation, and they have a bad reputation, and that's politicians.
Oh. Yeah, wouldn't it be great if they could all just collaborate and say, you know what, you do this well and I do that well, so why don't we just do that, and that's the way that we
well,
can
they have. They'll have to flip it. I'm going to make a political statement. They have to flip a coin as to who's going to be the best liar.
Right. Exactly. Well, and the funny thing to me is because I actually enjoy debating about politics, and so it's always funny to me because I'll get into a debate a little bit, and then I'll say, okay, well, what is it that you want in the end? And people will say, well, I want this. And I'll say, well, I want that too. Isn't it funny that we seem to come from completely opposite directions and everybody pretty much wants the same thing? So what would happen if we figured out the best way to make that happen and work together on that? Well, you know, I think that's where the controversy comes in. What's the best way?
Deborah's got a solution for the whole thing. She says, put the four-year-olds in a room and let them figure it out, and they'll show us the way.
There you go. I think that's probably very true.
I know it is. We've got a 4.5-year-old grandchild that I'm pretty sure could solve all the problems of the world in pretty short order. She is a funny little girl, but she's smart, and she gets it. She understands what would be a good solution sometimes. It just makes sense to me. Put them all in a room and say, you guys have got to figure this out because the adults are just having too much trouble.
Yeah, yeah. Put them in there with some pizza, and they'll be happy, and they'll get it happened.
That's right. Well, and the interesting thing is that in working with kids, which, you know, that's, as a psychotherapist, I was an adolescent addiction specialist, and I worked with kids of all different ages. I really saw that they had so much wisdom to offer, so many great ideas. People always think I have such an interesting way of dealing with my kids because I've got a 20-year-old and a 14-year-old, and I will often ask them, I'll say, well, what do you think about this situation? And it helps them learn how to think, but I'll tell you something, they've got some brilliant ideas.
It's amazing when you boil the adult baloney out of it, it can happen. It can absolutely mm-hmm. happen. There's no doubt about it. Well, let's go real briefly, if you don't mind, Arisia. Let's talk. You've got a download that I've taken down, the 7 most common marketing mistakes and how to avoid them. We've got some time left. Why don't we just kind of go through those, if you want, just to highlight the ones that you like best and tell us what they are, and maybe we'll have a few words of discussion on each one, and we'll just kind of go through that list. So which one would you like to start with?
Well, why don't we start with number one? Because, you know, we've kind of been talking about this, and mistake number one is marketing the old way in the new world. And I'll tell people, too, that as we're talking about this, if they're interested in downloading the whole thing, they can certainly do that. It's at www.ariciolafrance.com. And I'm going to spell my name because it's unusual. It's ARISIALAFRANCE, and you can download this for yourself. So mistake number one is marketing the old way in the new world.
And that's pretty much what we're talking about. You've got to come into the current century, don't you? You just can't sit there and do it all the old way. And when I was talking about the old way, I'm talking about making sure the foundation is there. That's still, I think, important. But the new techniques, the new technologies and so on and so forth, is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's good to know what you do, who you want to work with, and how you can reach those people. That's important. But I think that what has happened, and this really kind of is a pendulum swing in a way, we're kind of going back to the 1950s way of doing business, because for a long time we got away from customer service, and it was just, you know, how much can I make doing as little as possible, and that was kind of a philosophy that came into being in the 80s and now maybe the 70s, late 70s and the 80s. And you saw these stores of a lot of self-service and pick it out yourself, a lot of how can we make this as cheaply as possible. And you'll notice that we're moving away from that. And there's a lot of people that are saying, you know, because of political reasons, I don't want to buy stuff that is made in sweatshops, or I want to make sure that I'm eating organic. And you're seeing a lot of people not wanting so much added stuff, like added value. Well, I'll give you this, and that's not all, you get this, and that's not all, you get that. People are like, well, you know, I don't really need more stuff, but I would really like to be able to call somebody and ask if I have a question about this, and I'd like to get a human being on the phone instead of an answering machine. So you're seeing a lot more of a return to that one-to-one kind of customized service that people are wanting.
Certain element of rolling up your sleeves and getting your hands a little dirty by being in the front lines yourself.
Right.
The next one is learn all you can about the new rules of marketing. That's kind of what we touched on, but maybe you can elaborate on that a little bit more.
That's actually the solution for number one.
Oh, okay. I told Arisia that I didn't get the big print. Go to the next one, Deborah, because I can't see with my glasses on.
Mistake number two is not understanding yourself or your ideal client, and we definitely spoke about that in the first little while that we were on together.
Right. Yep. That's really important because a lot of people will say, "Gosh, you know, I would like to do such and such for a living," and this happens with career seekers too. And they'll say, well, I want to do this because that's what my dad did, and so that's what I should go into. Or everybody expects me to do yada yada for work. And so they feel that they need to do that, and so they go into it, and then they're miserable. I've worked with people that have spent 12 years in medical school, and then they finish, they do that work for 6 months, and they call me, and they're like, gosh, I am so stressed out, and I realize that I hate doing this. And it's like, well, why did you become a doctor? Well, because I felt like I was supposed to. So really getting in touch with what is it that you truly want to do and that you love to do, that you're passionate about. And usually what I find people saying, whether it's, you know, putting together their own business or career seekers or people even in retirement, they'll say, well, you know, everybody could do this or that. The nose to the grindstone people will say, well, yeah, but if everybody did what they wanted to do, then, you know, it's like I can't make any money doing this. That's silly. It's ridiculous. The thing is that I have worked with hundreds of job seekers. I used to work with people who were laid off from General Motors, Johnson & Johnson, places like that, you know, really large companies, to help them kind of figure out what is it that I want to do next. And the amazing thing is some of them wanted to do things. I was like, my gosh, how do we convert this into a career? And there are careers out there for people who do just about anything. The thing that comes easiest to you, that you enjoy doing the most, is your gift. That's what you can make money at it, just about anything. I mean, I should say anything at all, because I've talked to so many people who've done such amazing things, interesting things, but things I never imagined could be a career, and yet they're working, earning good money doing it.
Absolutely. And what I have been working with lately is the whole idea of reinvention for people, you know, over 50 years old generally, who have, for various reasons, either they've retired or they are unretiring because their money is not going to last long enough, whatever that is, for a lifestyle that they would like to keep going with. So I'm doing what I call, I've actually branded myself as the Reinvention Success Coach. And exactly what you're talking about, you know, what exactly is it that lights you up to the point where you would just jump out of bed every day so happy to be doing that work so that it's really not work, and make money at it and leave your legacy because you can change the world or move mountains or whatever it is that you're trying to accomplish. And it's really fantastic to help people figure out how to get into that space. I love it. I absolutely love it. And, of course, that's what I have reinvented myself to actually do that work. So I know what I'm talking about, and it's fun, and I love it.
Oh, yeah, and if we can go down the retirement rabbit hole, too, I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the misnomers around retirement that maybe your audience might not know about. The retirement age is 65. Do you know how that came about, Deborah?
I don't.
Well, it's really kind of a cool story. There was a private railroad that decided to come up with the first pension plan in 1874. And they kind of randomly said, well, 65 years old, how does that sound? It's like, yeah, 65 is good. Well, the life expectancy was right around 45 years old. So very few people were able to actually take advantage of that pension plan. So in 1934, the American railroad workers adopted a pension fund. They came up with it, and it actually kind of became a federal law of 65 years old was when people would get the pension. And the life expectancy at that time was 60. So in 1935, Social Security picked this up, and they just kind of went with it because the railroads at that time were quite big and developing railroads. And so they said, well, they came up with 65. That sounds like a good age. Let's come up with it. But the problem is that most Americans now live to be around 80 years old. And when that was created, the life expectancy was 60. So socially, it's something that no longer really works. And it was kind of really a one or two generation anomaly. In World War II, right following World War II, people were told, have as many babies as possible, because a lot of soldiers were dying in the war. So it was like, we've got to kind of build up the population, so it's patriotic to have lots of kids. And when that happened then, as those kids got to be 18, 20, 24, and they were going into the workforce, it was just the responsible thing to step down at 65, because the baby boomers needed jobs. And so that was another reason that Social Security came into existence. It was like, well, okay, these kids need jobs, but we can't just say, you know, you're out and, you know, you have no way of supporting yourself. And so that's really kind of how that whole thing came in. The problem is that as the boomers were growing up, especially people that are now in their mid-40s into their 50s, they were brought up with this idea that there's overpopulation and we've got to be really careful and you should not have more than two children because, you know, of the overpopulation stuff. So one child to replace you, one child to replace your partner, and that should be it. And so you don't see these huge families with 10, 12, you know, I mean, we have the Duggars on TV with their 19 kids, but that's considered just, wow, that's incredible. How do they do that? It's not the norm anymore. And so we don't have those kids putting into Social Security as much. You know, before it was kind of the flip way. So retirement was really kind of just for one or two generations. And we sort of said, okay, well, that's the way to do it because that's how my parents did it. That whole thing is shifting too, and fewer people are taking a traditional retirement where they quit working. And those that are finding that they wind up feeling, I mean, not all of them, but a lot of them are finding that it just doesn't work for them. They're not happy with it. You know, working meets more needs than just bringing money in. There's the whole social aspect to it. You know all of this. There's the social aspect. There is the prestige, the challenges, flexing the brain, and really having a sense of purpose. So there's a lot of pieces. So I just had to go down that little rabbit hole because I thought it was kind of interesting how they even came up with the retirement age.
Well, that is fascinating. And the other part that we've got to deal with is that many of us will live to be well over 100. And potentially 120. That
right.
is very, very doable. And, you know, the more exciting and relevant or excited and relevant we feel long as possible, and we can do that. That's what coaches are for, frankly, is to kind of help you figure out how to stay relevant and engaged in your own life and, you know, really get the most out of it so that you want to just contribute and live longer and be excited and all that stuff. My gosh, we're going to all be standing around at age 120 going, whoa, my Social Security gave up a long time ago.
Right. Well, and it's kind of interesting to me because we've come out of this place of personal responsibility that I think was quite big in the 30s, 40s, into the 50s. And then we got into this age of having somebody else sort of take care of us. And we're coming now back into the cycle of, wow, you know, I guess I do need to take responsibility for myself. And, Pete, you talked about that a little bit with the, you know, you kind of got to have some of the nose to the grindstone sort of stuff. And I think that kind of comes in when we're talking about taking responsibility for ourselves because we're seeing that Social Security, Medicare, all of that kind of stuff, we don't know if that's going to be there. So what can we do to take care of ourselves? And it feels so good, I think, to take that personal responsibility and to take care of yourself. And so I think people are coming back into it, sometimes kicking and screaming. It's kind of a scary thought for some people, but I also think that it is very, very empowering because you can, from that place, you get to make all the decisions and all of the choices.
Well, it's what I find, and it's been the case for probably the last 20 or 25 years, certainly heading in that direction from 20, 25 years ago, but it's obviously, I think, very much the case now, is that you have to be able to take care of yourself for the simple reason that if you're working for corporate America is not going to take care of you like they once did. I firmly believe that it won't be that many more years down the road that the person that has stayed with a company for 25 years, 30 years has been vested. There may not even be the possibility of vesting in retirement because everybody's got to have their own 401ks and they got to have this and they got to have that because the companies are going to use you up, chew you up, and spit you out, and then what are you going to do? And you've got to be willing and able to do whatever it is to take care of yourself. And I think that's getting to be a way of the world, and that's where I kind of, you're absolutely right when you said that's where my grinding comes in, because you've got to be able to do it for yourself. You can't rely on anybody else because the reliance is not there. And also it may eventually be that the Social Security is not going to be there. And I know the pundits all say, well, it'll always be there. Well, there's no guarantee. I don't see that written anywhere either. So I think we all have to take on that responsibility and have to wear that self-responsibility hat. I do believe that. And that's more political than anything else, but it's also very much a reality.
Well, I think it's funny, too, the view that you have of corporations. It's always interesting to me to hear different people's ideas looking, you know, through the lens of their personality type, because I look at it, and I'm kind of more of, people will say that I have rosy-colored glasses on sometimes, but the way I see it is that everyone is a contractor at this point, so I kind of see it through a different lens. And you're right, people are not going to necessarily be at the same job from the time they graduate from high school or college until they retire, but I think part of that, too, is because people are living so much longer. So everybody is going to be a contractor. That's really kind of the trend and the direction that we're headed. And so what that means is that it is impacting job seekers. It is impacting people that are working in different careers, and we're starting to look at things and say, what is it that I want to do? What is it that would be fun to do right now? What is it that I'm passionate about doing? And there's a lot more space for people to do that. And I've always shopped because I try and hit Costco like at 3. I don't think it's going to be crowded. And it's always crowded. And the reason is because people no longer have the 9-to-5 job. If they want to work 9-to-5, they can do that. But a lot of people are like, you know, actually I would rather work from 10 until 2, 7 days a week. Or I'd rather work 12-hour days, 3 days a week. And people are really kind of coming up with their own work schedules because they're contractors. There's a lot of freedom in being a contractor. And a lot of people are coming up with their own businesses and their own ideas and then taking it into corporations just like I do. You know, I go into corporations and I do trainings with people and I work with executives to help them to create this alternative to the elevator speech and the alternative to the mission and vision statements that they feel are kind of old and stale and not working anymore. So we kind of put it into more of a living, breathing sort of thing that they can adapt and change. You know, it's working out well for people, actually, when they realize that they are a contractor.
And a lot of people are being forced to be contractors, whether they like it or not,
mm-hmm.
because just of the way of the world now and the downsizings and so on and so forth, they still have to work. They still have their mortgages. They still have all of their obligations. But that corporate entity is not there for them, and so on and so forth. They have to actually do that themselves so they can become a contractor. And that is a pretty big adjustment for a lot of people. It's a huge adjustment.
But I think that what we don't remember sometimes, I mean, I look at my insurance, my medical insurance, and it covers everything. I mean, it covers physical therapy. It covers, it doesn't cover a massage. It'd be nice if it did. But it covers a lot of day-to-day kinds of stuff. Insurance, the way that it was originally set up, was really insurance for a huge disastrous thing, and not even going in and getting your tonsils out or something like that. It covered catastrophic, if you had heart disease or cancer, basically, it would cover you. But everything else is out of pocket, and people really just kind of saved their own money, and then when they needed to go in, they would just pay out of pocket. And we see that we're starting, that wave, that trend is actually kind of starting to come back because so many people are now seeking alternative care that their insurance doesn't cover. So people are kind of getting back into that trend of saying, well, my insurance is here for catastrophic kinds of things, but really I like going in for acupuncture or I like going in for this or that that's not covered. And I don't know what's going to happen with health insurance. You know, that's a huge thing, especially with everybody being contractors. What are we going to do about it? But more and more people now are doing catastrophic kinds of stuff where it's like, okay, well, I need this in case I have a car accident or something really bad happens, and otherwise I just need to go out of pocket. So, again, we're coming back into that trend that was kind of big in the 1950s.
You can always barter with the chicken.
Well, and, you know, truthfully, there are, I was watching some special on healthcare in America with Ed Stossel, and he was talking about that. It was fascinating to me that there are a lot of doctors that are now starting to say, I don't take insurance, I don't take, you know, Medicare or Medicaid, but I'll work with you on the price. And
right.
So there, you look at the traditional MD that they take all of those things, they've got to pay for so much overhead and so much help coming in to untangle all the insurance and stuff like that, that they do need to charge a higher fee. But when you talk about these doctors that don't use any of those kinds of things, they can charge $30 for a visit.
Yep, that's very true. It's all about being creative in many cases, isn't it?
It is. It is.
Absolutely. Well, is there anything else that you'd like to add? We didn't get into your 7 points, but that's okay. I mean, we didn't have to do that today. We can do that another day.
Yes, absolutely. Well, we've got to keep some mystery, too, Pete. We want them to go out and we want them to download the paper so that they can learn that on their own. So, I would encourage people to just go out to that website, check that out. You can download the paper. The other thing is you know, I do a lot of work with mindset. So if you are somebody that is dealing with procrastination, for example, I have a class coming up where I'm going to be talking about how to overcome procrastination, and that's going to be happening in a couple of weeks. So people can go out to my website and check that out. I offer classes and one-to-one coaching, too.
Is that procrastination class, is that a class online? Is that how do you handle that?
Yeah, it's basically people will just, I will give out the number to people that register for the call, and then we all gather together and we chat. I have the class offered, I think I have one section at noon and one section at 7 o'clock at night. That's Mountain Standard Time, so that we have a lot of students from Europe as well, so that way they can get in on the call. And we're going to be talking a lot about you know, some of the main reasons that people procrastinate and how they can work past that.
Well, Arisha, that really sounds good, and I'll make sure that I check that out tomorrow.
I knew he was going to say that. I thought you were going to say later, but you said tomorrow. I've been with this man way too long.
Well, it reminds me of a friend of mine in college, and she was just incredibly, incredibly introverted and shy. And I was sitting down and talking with her father once about how he was trying to help her out. And he said, I signed her up for a shyness group, but nobody showed up.
Yeah. Very good. Very good. I think we're going to end on that. And a great big thank you to you, Arisha, for being with us today as our guest, Arisha LaFrance. Just a phenomenal show and thoroughly enjoyed it. And I'm sure that anybody that listens to the archives will enjoy it as well. We will look forward to having you back on the show again in the not-too-distant future. And thanks again for visiting with us. And I'm certainly glad that I spent 8 minutes on the tail end of the show that you were on that I heard you on Blog Talk, because I think it's of benefit to all of our listeners that come to our site, and they can all learn something from our conversation today. So thanks again for being with us. You've been listening to the Boomer and the Babe Show on Blog Talk Radio in Phoenix, Arizona, where we bring good conversation to the world. Today we brought you a conversation with Arisha LaFrance, psychological marketing guru. And you can listen again to the Boomer and the Babe Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. Learn more about our new affiliation with Arizona Highways Magazine. We're going to be doing a little bit of Arizona Highways Radio as the time comes up. So watch for that, listen for that, and remember, we do a lot more than just host this show on Blog Talk. We also publish ebooks, publish a free online magazine. Check it all out at boomerandthebabe.com. And everything that makes up the Boomer and the Babe Enterprises program, be sure to make the second half of your life the best half of your life. And have a great day, everybody.
To the Boomer and the Babe Show, where we bring interesting conversations to the world. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet as Boomer and Babe, and on Facebook as Pete Peters 47. As always, you can friend us on Blog Talk Radio or sign up for our newsletter at boomerandthebabe.com. Email us at host@boomerandthebabe.com with any of your comments. Remember, at 50, you're just getting started.